Well, welcome back as we head into hour two of our daily three-hour tour. It is a delight to bring back to the show Congressman David Schweikert representing Arizona's 1st Congressional District. Sorry we've been missing you, David, due to the time changes, but it's good to have you back. And it was good to see you a couple weeks ago.
The time changes and the lunacy of the job.
I know, there's a lot of it, isn't there? And it was good running into you, too, the other day.
Yeah. But look, it's what you sign up for, and that's just the nature of something that happens to be have a lot of human input, shall we say.
Yeah. You guys have your hands full in Congress right now, don't you?
Oh, yeah. So in 20 minutes, I'll manage part of the floor time tonight, and then we'll start amendment roulette tomorrow. On everything from a border protection bill to the financing of helping our allies to it's going to be an interesting. We're probably here through the weekend.
Would you say a word or two, Congressman, about the importance of winning the Senate? Because, this great work you guys are doing, I mean, it does find a yield and stop sign, doesn't it? On the other side of D.C., on the other side of the Capitol, I mean.
And here, do you all remember, God, if you're our age, the 70s, early 80s, Schoolhouse Rock?
Yeah.
I'm a Bill on Capitol Hill.
Yeah,
only part of that is actually how it ultimately works. Because so often you're working on a piece of legislation, and you're running around trying to get votes, you're trying to get the committee of jurisdiction willing to hear it, and then you run into one of the leadership staff saying, hey, we've already gotten word from the Senate, they're not going to hear it, so we're not going to spend time on it. It's not like Bill on the Capitol Hill where the House passes things, sends it to the Senate passes things, sends them over here, and we rework them. In many ways, the calendar has become so overwhelming because some of it's our own personal dysfunction, let's be honest. People who are fussing and fighting, and that often, because we don't control the Senate, there's a lot of things you'd love to do that you just don't even move out of the House because it's never getting a hearing. It's like our H.R. 2, the big border protection bill, wasn't immigration, border protection bill, was one of the very first things we passed a year ago. Send it over to the Senate and disappears. So yes, that's the long way around of saying how important it is to control both bodies so things move and you can work together.
Talk to me about a piece of legislation you're promoting that you have put together, which I think could have bipartisan support if pitched the right way, and it's the Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act. It has to do with R&D expensing. It has to do with small businesses.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff. Yeah.
All right. For everyone, it's a tax geek, so all three of you.
Stop it.
Well, yeah, you're a bit of one, too,
even though
you're a lawyer.
I know. That's a double hit. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. was I being mean there?
You're being mean, David Schweikert.
When we did the economic modeling after the 2017 tax reform, remember, individual rates, corporate rates, pass-through rates, the ability to do expensing, research and development expensing, international repatriation. There were dozens and dozens and dozens of complex things in that tax reform bill.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where we got the most economic growth out of? It turns out it was the ability for a business to say, I'm going to research something and build a new style of piece of equipment. I'm going to go out and buy a new piece of manufacturing equipment to make us more efficient. And because we're more efficient, I can pay my workers more. And I can expense it. Instead of depreciating it over 5 years or 7 years, I can depreciate it on the first day.
Right.
And it starts this virtuous cycle of, I buy the new piece of equipment, I get more efficient, I pay my workers more. Well, now my competitors are buying new pieces, I got to buy a new one. And we saw this productivity gain because people were pushing themselves to get more and more and more efficient. That, on research and development, that expired. And on other types of capital goods, it's been shrinking down. And next year or so, it goes down to just regular old depreciation where you have to do it over some things as long as 12 years, depending on its category. And now with these high interest rates, businesses saying, I can't buy the piece of equipment. Right. I have to finance it, and right. I have to finance it at today's interest rates or right. my research and development. I have to finance it at these. So we're actually seeing research and development and capital equipment purchases in America flattening out or falling, which is going to really, really hurt workers' wages, because workers' wages go up from two things. Inflation, which is you're peddling, you know, and it's running in place, our productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And we've even met with some of the Fed economists how incredibly important it is to get up this productivity cycle. So, yes, I have a piece of legislation that's trying to step back the ability to expense research and development and capital purchases for productivity, and it's dead in the Senate right now. And it's actually a couple Republicans that are fighting over it.
Well, we can say a word about that if you want in a sec. Let me just follow up on this point. First of all, I love your energetic and optimistic attitude about this. I really do, because productivity is about growth. And you're one of the few people, I'd like to count myself among them, that thinks if we are going to get our hands in a meaningful way around some of our deficit problems and other financial problems, it really is going to be about growth. But growth is about productivity and the kind of thing you're talking about. This is where mm-hmm. growth comes from, right? Am I right on this?
It's both a productivity and the adoption of technology disruptions.
Okay, yeah. Why are Republicans in the Senate slow?
Because part of it was the only way we could get through and get a promise of the president's signature and a promise that at least Democrats would, is we played with the child tax credit, which uh-huh. often had been a Republican issue.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have to deal with the political dance. We have a number of our Senate friends, and one of them's my buddy, and he's my problem. But as he says, look, I'm running for the Senate leadership now that McConnell's leaving, and I need to look tough on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that just infuriates me, because it's the dance of perception over the dance over good economics.
Okay. All right. Well, what can we do? Call our senators and tell them to push to move it?
Yeah. In a weird way, this is sort of my job.
Okay.
Because it's sort of inside baseball.
Okay.
So every couple of days I'm walking over, bringing them a cappuccino, saying, can we talk about this?
Yeah.
And there's other things. I have, you know, the SRP lift storage bill that I got out of the House, turning just a sort of a drop storage lake over basically Apache Lake and turning it into a big battery. Things like that that are very local that would be really good for our economy. And I've gotten them out of the House, and they're sitting in the Senate. Mm-hmm. So if any of you are friends with senators, please help me.
Okay, David Schweiker. Thank you for that. Is Speaker Johnson safe in his position from where you see it?
No.
Yeah, right? It's always tender, isn't it?
It's to be played out.
Yeah.
And this is for another show, because it's going to take a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, I have this fear that the pounding troll farms coming out of China and Iran and Russia.
Yeah.
There's a great article right now, if you're into Wired magazine and those sort of things,
sure.
talking about the analytics that even Microsoft and others have done, tracking all the fake and AI and all these artificial videos that have been crashing into the United States the last year. And it's basically meant to tear us apart as a society. Our problem is, you would be shocked how many people that don't listen to intellectual talk radio like you, who get these crazy things on their phone and they believe it.
Yeah. Send me that article if you don't mind. I'd like to run it through the audience. I'd love to run it through the audience.
Oh, as a matter of fact, I have a couple more. I'll send them to you tonight.
Yeah, please.
And it's, you got to understand, we, in many ways, we are at war right now.
Yeah.
But it's an information war.
I know.
They're trying to not win. They're trying to pollute the hearts and minds of Democratic Republicans.
I know, and we're sitting ducks on that as an open society. It's eternally been the problem of the open society, is that, you know, they don't have these problems in Russia or China, because they can turn the press.
They turn it off.
Yeah, they just turn it off. And
we had some intelligence data last week that China is now spending billions of dollars on these misinformation campaigns.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that's like been going at Israel has actually been coming through Chinese servers.
Oh, of course. And TikTok has done its number on us as well. Well, David, well, go ahead.
You got to be. It's much bigger than TikTok.
I understand.
On every platform around us.
I understand. Well, God love you, sir. Thank you for checking in. Go back to work. We need
Goodbye
you
now.
Busy. All right. Thank you, David Schweiker. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Seth Leibson here for my friends from the Midas Gold Group War Room. The MAGA veterans at Midas point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank. While the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank, that belongs to you. This is your wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do, a controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactional freedoms. Protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call to veteran-owned Midas Gold Group at 480-360-3000 or go to MidasGoldGroup.com. That's 480-360-3000. Or MidasGoldGroup.com. Always faithful, Midas Gold Group. MAGA and proud of it, MidasGoldGroup.com. Young David, how was your 40s party last night? Did you go to Hanny's or Haney's?
Really a party. It was just two guys getting together, having fun, wearing old clothes. And
where'd you guys go? Hanny's?
Yes, Hanny's? We did go to Hanny's.
And is there a story? Were you home late? Or were you bleary-eyed this morning?
I had...
You had what?
Chicken Milanese. Yes.
Okay.
I had that, and I showed him the dolls downstairs.
Yeah.
The creepy dolls.
Yeah. Not your family.
No, not my family. Yeah. No, the dolls that probably lived in that building since it was built in 1947.
Yeah, I know. It's a fun building.
And then we walked over to the Hilton Garden Inn, and I showed him that building, which used to be a bank.
Yeah.
1932, I want to say.
Yep.
31 or 32.
Yep. They still have a rooftop bar up there?
Yes, we did not go there. We just showed off the building.
Yeah. Okay. Nice work. It is kind of fun with that bank, with the vault look and the elevators and all that.
Oh, yeah.
That is a fun... Are you are you done driving our company car into the ground? We have a couple company cars. You've been driving one around to help promote the station.
Right.
Once you ran it out of gas, which is unheard of. No one ever runs out of gas.
Nobody told me that.
And
that
you got a flat tire. You are unsafe at any speed in the company car. The suits upstairs need to yank your license, I think.
I don't like that idea. There are legitimate reasons.
Why don't you put a Manonatize the Eschaton bumper sticker on our company car?
I'm all for it.
All right.
I'm all for it.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
You know, I may wear this T-shirt that our good friend got us at the gym or something. I was just telling Mr. Bill, perhaps if somebody approaches me and knows the saying, that's a really good sign, you know?
Yeah.
Like if a pretty young lady at the gym saw me and was like, I know what that shirt means.
Yeah.
She's already batting 1,000.
Yeah. It's like the Van Buren's Club. It's a very elite and select group of people. Right, Bill? The Van Buren's? The gang, was it a club or a gang? I think it was a gang, the Van Buren gang. Yeah, it'll be like that. Yeah, Ann Atkinson did you a nice favor there. She's going to introduce you to like-minded people just by your sartorial demeanor. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you see Joe Biden?
Did I see him?
More of a rhetorical. give me the chance to use a colon here. Did you see Joe Biden in Pennsylvania stopping into a fast food restaurant? He's kind of trying to mimic what Donald Trump keeps doing in New York, where he's showing up at bodegas and stuff and Chick-fil-A's and that sort of thing, and everyone goes crazy for him. So Joe Biden, you can see it online if you want. He walks into a fast food joint. It's hard to tell which one. And, you know, he's doing the Biden shuffle, which is different from the Lido shuffle. Can we have the Lido shuffle, by the way?
Like that song.
Yeah. Can we have that as an out bumper? Get rid of the Love Boat. Put in Bob's.
No, I will never get rid of the Love Boat.
We'll get rid of something. And
I have a couple ideas.
Okay, but put in the chorus of the Lido shuffle. It's actually the only good Boz Skaggs song.
That day, I agree with you.
Yeah,
wholeheartedly.
Yeah. So let's
Lido missed the boat that day.
Yeah. We know the song. We just need it for a bumper.
Maybe the audience doesn't.
They know it.
I'm sure there's one person out there.
It's a very smart audience. It's a very wise audience. Anyway, Joe Biden is in it's a very culturally it's a very culturally attuned audience. Joe Biden is in Pennsylvania and walking through the fast food restaurant doing the Biden shuffle, not the Lido shuffle, the Biden shuffle. And people are just kind of ignoring him. They don't really care that the president is there with the whole retinue of Secret Service. They're just kind of, he's not loved. And then he goes up to the counter and does an order and goes behind the counter. And as he's walking out, this is the telling part. This is not to make fun of the fact that people were ignoring him, but it is interesting. In his theoretical home state, how many home states does he now have? How many churches was he brought up in? Greek Orthodox, Italian American, Jewish synagogues. Was there a Jamaican or a Haitian one?
Oh yeah,
somewhere?
He also said he grew up in the Black Church.
And the Black Church, yeah. He's the most multi-ethnic raised president we've ever had, if you can believe anything he says. Anyway, so he's walking out, and there's press there, and one of them shouts a question to him about Xi Jinping, a serious question. Shouts a question to him, and he goes, "I can't hear you." She shouts it again, and he says what he normally does as an answer. What do you think his answer was, Mr. Bill? No. That was his answer. It's best he can muster. No. She says, and he thinks that's clever. You know, he thinks that's what we're looking for, just a no. You know, he thinks this is really this great answer. Clever, smart man, you know. In control, serious, and his no means no, and it's taken just like Iran took don't, and just like the Taliban took don't. It's taken very seriously, just like Vladimir Putin took don't. And then she says to him, why no? Why is your answer no? You know what he says? He laughs and says, don't jump, and walks out. It's just... Does he think he's funny? Is he not connecting words and thoughts? And why are we allowing this to go on? We went through this charade, young David. Charade, I'd like to say, but it might be charade. I think it is charade. I'd want to say charade. Charade is fun.
Charade is a senator from Ohio, but not actually.
How do you pronounce charade?
Charade.
Okay. I want charade. Do they say it in British, in Britain, charade? I can hear Higgins on Magnum PI calling it a charade, but he had a British accent. Anyway, we went through this charade of an impeachment trial of Alejandro Mayorkas today. So the House had impeached him. I think he's only the second cabinet member to ever be impeached. The House did impeach him. It goes to trial in the Senate today. Today was trial day. Two counts of impeachment. And the Democratic majority, Chuck Schumer, they basically shut the trial down on day one. They didn't allow the trial to go forward, and they dismissed the charges through a sine die motion. It's the other word I can't say, sine die. Through a sine die motion, they dismissed the charges for that. So the trial will not happen. Now, we knew it wasn't going to succeed, but it might have been a valuable thing to see the witnesses and the evidence against Alejandro Mayorkas, of which it is ample. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Oh, I know what that is. That's Henry Mancini.
Yes.
What's
the name of the song?
Well, I should have known better because I just saw this movie the other day for the first time, Charade.
Really?
Yeah, I should have thought about that. Connect thought and verbiage.
Off of the cultural zeitgeist that was James Bond, 1962, 63.
Yeah, why did I think it was supposed to have more of an Alfred Hitchcock than an Ian Fleming theme to it? Audrey Hepburn.
I think they made it as a response to James Bond. But
not Hitchcock? Are you sure?
It may have more of a Hitchcock style to it. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was around the same time as Dr. No.
Yeah.
from Russia with Love.
Cary Grant, Audrey Hepburn, Walter Matthau, James Coburn,
and George Kennedy.
And George Kennedy. Hell of a cast. And then
a pretty decent actor that not a lot of people know about.
Who?
George Kennedy.
Oh, he's a great actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still playing. Is that deliberate?
Yeah. Are you done talking about the movie?
I don't have to be.
We keep playing it.
Has anyone ever looked better in a suit than Cary Grant?
No. In fact, many menswear stylists talk about his suit in North by Northwest as being the epitome of a gentleman's
suit. The one
suit
that gets sponged and pressed.
Yes, the one that gets sponged and pressed, as we talked about yesterday.
Yeah. No one looks better in a suit. I mean, he looks great in a suit. And I don't know why we can't look like that.
You could.
No, I've tried. I can't. No matter how. I don't know. Those hairs, those eyes. What's the Frank Sinatra? That hair, those eyes. The Tender Trap, is that the lyrics for the Tender Trap? All right, let me go to our good buddy Larry in Tempe. Hello, Larry. How are you, sir?
Hi, Seth. I will do my best. Well, first of all, you've never seen me in a suit, so you don't know that I don't look better than Cary Grant.
Yeah, I don't know that. Know that. And if I didn't say anything, if you'll pardon the humor here, the gallows humor, you've never seen me and never will see me in a suit.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right. I won't say that I look better than him. I wouldn't even dream of that. So
you sound better than him. You probably look better than him.
Well, I will do my best to sound okay. I'm recovering from bronchitis, and I hope a coughing spit doesn't come up or a coughing fit doesn't come up, and so I won't. I'll try not to talk a huge amount either, but the Mayorkas thing today I found very interesting, and the automatic reaction I think for most of us would be that's a bad thing. But I wonder if it could actually have positive benefits down the line, because he wasn't going to be found guilty.
No.
Just because of the majority in the Senate.
Right.
And the Republicans can say, we tried to hold him accountable.
Yep.
And Democrats didn't want to have anything to do with it. They cast aside that easy. I think that's a lot with a public that, according to polls, they're already tired of the border issues. So I think that could have a bigger toll than the Democrats would think.
Maybe. I do think that they're playing with a bit of fire on the front of how they are gaming. Let's just call it it's a quasi-legal political system, but how they're gaming trials. Let's just put it that way, how they're gaming trials, whether they are running indictments or civil cases against the president in the middle of a campaign where he can't even go see his son graduate, or whether it's this kind of trial that they stop dead in its tracks by immediately dismissing the charges the minute they get the case. There's something going on here about two different standards of justice that's been going on for a while, a little bit more under the radar, but now it's over the radar. And you know, I've always had this thesis that people care about fairness, and there's at this point a lot of evidence that the system ain't fair.
That's right. And it goes back to what you said earlier about truth and talking about that lady who...
Yeah, I want to do more. Catherine Marr, NPR. All right. Well, rest your voice and call us when it's back in strong shape. Although you sounded great today. I love hearing from you, Larry. Don't be a stranger, okay?
All right. Take care.
All right, brother. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. This looks interesting. Andy in Phoenix. Hello, Andy.
How you doing, Seth?
I'm doing fine. Hey, how are you?
I had one of those magical musical moments the other day.
Yes, sir.
A friend of mine I had gone to prep school and junior college with 40 years ago, or 50 years ago, called me up, and we're talking on the phone, and in the background, a computer is playing a song, Never Been to Spain.
Three Dog Night. Yep.
Yeah, but written by Hoyt Axton.
Yeah, he did Joy to the World, too.
That's Hoyt Axton. I said, yeah. He said, don't you remember? You met him at the World's Fair. I said, no. He had called me after my senior year in high school and said, hey, I can get you a job in the World's Fair. And I lived in St. Louis, so I hitchhiked in New York, and he got me a job. And, we went out one night with meet another friend of ours in Greenwich Village, and he was with Hoyt Axton. And we sat in a Greenwich Village bar, and he'd ask the people to give him a sentence, and they'd give him a sentence, he'd make a song up about it.
Yeah, he was talented.
Quite incredible. Yeah, that guy was incredible.
But although, some of the sentences, yeah, he'd make a lyric out of it. I mean, if you were sitting with Hoyt Axton and you said, bullfrog. Well, sure. Yeah. Jeremiah was a bullfrog. He was a good friend of mine.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how he came up with a lot of his songs,
yeah,
by the way.
I suppose that's right. Arizona gets mentioned in Never Been to Spain, right? Arizona, not Oklahoma, or Oklahoma, not Arizona. What does it matter? Something like that.
He's born in Oklahoma, not Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. What does it matter? Yeah. And he compares Oklahoma.
Yeah, so he wrote a lot of songs Three Dog Night's made and played a lot of songs Three Dog Night, took the commercial. And I remember as a teenager going to high school, he had the big song in the 60s, which was one of the big songs, was Greenback Dollar.
Oh, for the Kingston Trio, right, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, he wrote it.
Yeah, nice.
And he sang it, too. His version is a lot better than the Kingston Trio.
Is he the most famous person you've ever met?
In a roundabout way, yeah. He was a TV star. He was on radio quite a bit. He was in the movies.
Yeah.
Wrote a lot of songs, a lot of number one hits, and
maybe it's for fun. I appreciate the story, Andy. Thank you. It might be good, fun Friday day, David. Keep in mind, not the most famous person you ever met, but maybe the most interesting person you ever met. That might be a fun game. I think, didn't Reader's Digest used to have a thing like that? The most important person in my life or something like that? But maybe the... Hello? Maybe the most... Am I still on? Maybe the most interesting person you ever met. Why are you censoring me? What do you think? You're Catherine Marr and this is NPR?
I'll give it a good shot.
Yeah, evidently. Wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't that be fun? The most interesting person you've ever met? It'd be hard. You'd have to think about it.
The most interesting person I've ever met.
Yeah. Yeah. To ask that of the audience. I mean,
It of the audience, yes. Can you think of somebody in your life? You've met a lot more people than I have.
Well, I've been privileged to work with a lot of interesting people.
After all, you met William Buckley once.
Twice.
In an airport.
Thrice. Once in his house, once in an airport, and once at a conference. I don't know, and I don't even know if that would be... I mean, he is a damn interesting person. Maybe he is the most interesting person I've ever met. Maybe that is a fair answer. Who's more interesting than William Buckley? I don't know. That's a great question for me.
You know who are very interesting people?
Druids?
What?
I don't know.
Thanks for that one. The people who can't tell you what they've done.
Oh, like special ops types?
Yes, exactly. I met one or two of those.
Well, that qualifies William Buckley because he would never tell us what he did
right.
in the
he
CIA.
Did some CIA stuff,
and
yep.
he said he could never say. But you know who his boss was? Howard Hunt.
Yes, E. Howard Hunt. Yeah. Oh my goodness! I started watching a very interesting documentary last night after coming home from Hanny's, and I wanted to share it with you, but it was far too late.
Go ahead.
And I would suggest it if you have not already seen it.
What?
It's called R. Nixon.
I might have seen it.
And it's all of the Super 8 films that John Ehrlichman
I did see it.
And John
I did see
Dean
it. I did
and E.
see
Howard
it.
Hunt
yeah.
recorded while
they
were working in the Nixon White House.
I did. I
Very
did
cool
see it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's those backyard barbecues and stuff.
Yeah, and they're at Key Biscayne and Nixon's swimming and they're just taking shots of him.
Yeah, I did see it.
Apparently they were all sitting in a government vault somewhere and it's finally been declassified.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely saw it. What was his favorite alcoholic drink?
Nixon?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was a daiquiri.
He enjoyed Trader Vic's.
And he liked Trader Vic's and daiquiris with B.B. Rebozo.
Do you know what his favorite food was?
Meatloaf.
Is
that not right?
Well, he was a well-known Meatloaf fan.
Yeah.
But if you don't know what his favorite dish was.
What?
In the last meal that Nixon decided to have before leaving the White
House. Pot roast.
No. October 16th, 1974.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have that date wrong. August.
Yeah.
1974.
Yeah.
Cottage cheese with pineapple and ketchup. And there are pictures of it on the internet that you can go look up and vomit.
I actually kind of want that.
You want that?
I do. I kind of want it for dinner.
It's your last day in the White House.
Yeah.
You can choose whatever you want to eat,
yeah.
And the White House chef will probably have it in his cellar to make it for you.
Yeah.
And you decide to have cottage cheese, pineapples, and ketchup.
Well, I understand the point, and there's a there. First of all, it does sound kind of good. The tanginess with the cottage cheese.
No, hold on.
It does.
I will defend Nixon to my
okay,
dying
Catherine
breath,
Marr.
Not
truth is not where we need to start.
Cheese.
Truth is not the greatest place to start. A, B. His palate may have been a little, I mean, his appetite may have been a little off. It was his last night in the White House, but not by his dint of his own decision. He wasn't exactly, it might have been the nadir of his life. It may have been the lowest point of his life. As he said the next day, you never appreciate the highest mountaintops until you've walked through the lowest of valleys, right?
Yes.
So give him a little bit of wide berth on his appetite not being at its apex. But it does sound good. All right, I need to crowdsource a question for the audience. How do I do this with Dagny and her diet? We now have her on canned food because she stopped eating the dry food I've been giving her forever, for 15 years. She's now not – she went on a hunger strike. Not like the Harvard students who did a day-long hunger strike, a real hunger strike. She didn't eat for 4 days. So I got this canned food from the vet for her, and she scarfed it down. Now, Mr. Bill, who's had more dogs than I have, said, why don't you start integrating the dry with the wet, begging this question, pun intended, begging this question. Do I put the dry food on top of the wet food so she'll eat it to get to the wet, or do I put the dry food under the wet canned food so that it will absorb and soak in the moisture? Someone please tell me when we come back. Thank you. A real recording of the Lido Shuffle. But it's, yeah, but we need it for now. I like that.
You've always told me that live music is better.
I don't know if I've always told you that. I don't know if that's true. It's not always.
That's true. It's factually true that you've not always
It's not always true that it is better. It's not always true. Sometimes you want the great recording.
Sometimes it's fiction.
Yeah, sometimes it's fiction. I keep wanting to get to the story, and I keep running out of time to do it. I want to get to it tomorrow on this whole – you know I've been on a kick on this making real, reifying, concretizing – the notion that if you see something, we're obligated to say something. If you see something or hear something, we're obligated to say something. And, you know, 300 people chanting death to America isn't doing it, evidently. Waving Hezbollah flags in Manhattan isn't doing it, evidently. UCLA Medical School Psychiatry Department hosted a talk earlier this month that glorified self-immolation as a form of revolutionary suicide, raising concerns from prominent doctors and deepening a public relations crisis that has embroiled the elite medical school. The talk, Depathologizing Resistance, was delivered on April 2nd by two psychiatry residents at UCLA, Drs. Raghda Izar and Afar Mustafa, under the auspices of the department's diversity office, of course, and UCLA's Health Ethics Center. The remarks centered on the suicide of Aaron Bushnell. Remember him, the U.S. serviceman who set himself on fire in February to protest U.S. support for Israel? Or as Izar put it, indigenous Palestine? Bushnell had shown signs of mental distress before he died, according to a police report, and was widely seen as a casualty of mental illness. The presentation at UCLA, however, argued he should be considered a martyr, a man in full control of his mental faculties who had responded rationally to a genocide unfolding thousands of miles away. Elite medical schools are teaching this nonsense, Mr. Bill. They are ruining this country. They are ruining medicine. They are ruining... You know what? It's an offense to the category of psychiatry, and it's an offense to the category of medicine that doctors are rationalizing self-immolation and suicide as justifiable justifiable actions with someone in full comport of their capacities merely because we don't understand how genocide can inspire someone to do something like that. We're turning these terrorists into heroes. That's what we're doing. And we're having doctors sell this as prime cuts medicine. It's disgusting. I'd like the FBI to investigate it. I really would. Nidal Hassan did this. It's exactly the kind of stuff Nidal Hassan was teaching before he went to Fort Hood.